once you do that, you are an official speech-language pathology. You can put CCC-SLP, which is the Certificate of Clinical Competence in Speech-Language Pathology. This is for the national certification. Depending upon where students end up, they have to get licensed, or may have to get licensed, or they may have to get certification for working in the schools. And these vary state by state, but in general, the requirements for certification, for the national certification, have been copied by many states. So getting that national certification will qualify you in many states. Some may require that you have a course in classroom management or some additional course. But for the most part, once you get to this point, you're pretty much home free. Can you specialize? Simple answer is yes. We have, you know, once students graduate, they may focus on kids, they may focus on adults, they may focus on fluency or voice. They may work with children with autism, very special populations. So it really depends on the availability of positions where you want to be, and it depends on really what your interest is. I thought I'd put this up there because our students want to make a living. And in the United States, the median, now please realize this is median income, so throw into this people that just got out of school and people that have been out in the field for 30 years. So I'm not sure how useful the median is, but it reflects the prospects in speech-language pathology. So the median salary is about $76,000. That's across all kinds of settings. Projected jobs over the next 10 years, or 8 years, I guess, is that there will be an additional 26,000 positions in speech-language pathology. And that doesn't count the number of positions where people are retiring or moving on. So you can see the unemployment rate is 0.8%. Even Donald Trump would be proud of that unemployment rate, I guess. I'm probably bragging about it as we talk. There are currently about 145,000 SLP jobs as of 2016, probably a few more than that. The other thing is that in terms of best healthcare jobs, speech language pathology was ranked 18th out of 100 healthcare professions, and 23rd overall of all professions. So, sounds good. Yes?
What are some of the reasons for the increasing demand for such professionals? Are more people being diagnosed with a speech and language problem? Or
some of it is that. I mean, certainly if we look at autism, for example, the diagnosis of autism in the last 15 years, the diagnostic rate is increased. But we're also aging. And along with that aging process come associated disorders that affect communication. So I think it's a combination of those things. Population is growing. All of those things collectively are impacting on the demand for these positions. And in case you're worried, the likelihood of being replaced by a robot is pretty minimal. So, okay, so how am I doing? Oh, not bad, about a half hour. So that's pretty much the situation in the United States. Now, I'm going to talk a bit about China and what I know about China, what I've learned about China over the past, I guess, 5 or 6 years that I've been going and talking to individuals and reading and trying to learn about the situation there. But it's very fluid. It's changed a lot since 2014 when I first met with my colleague Wen Tao Gu at Nanjing Normal University, and now. There's been a tremendous change that is we're in the midst of right now. One of the things that struck me is that, I should indicate that the Chinese International Speech, Language, and Hearing Association was formed in about 2013, and it is a fledgling organization, but it's an organization attempting to kind of corral and identify what the profession is about in China and where it's going. And they did a survey, they got about 970 respondents of the estimated 10,000 speech language therapists or pathologists in China. This is an estimate because there's really no central place to go to and say how many speech language pathologists are out there. Many of them are in rehabilitation societies. In medical settings. That's really where the vast majority are located in China. Special schools, the percentages didn't show up here. But when you compare the kind of setting where most speech therapists are in China to the situation in the US, you see it's very different. In fact, very few speech therapists work in schools in China. They might work in a special school or a rehabilitation society. A few are working in higher education, similar to our case, or in the Bureau of Civil Affairs. So the jobs that people are located in are somewhat different. It's a much more medically oriented profession across the board in China. We certainly have individuals in the US who choose medical settings. But as you'll recall, that was only about 30 to 40%, whereas clearly over almost three quarters of the professions, in fact even more, are really more medically oriented. One thing I didn't point out here is that the estimates are 10,000 speech language pathologists in China. In the US, we have 150,000, give or take. China has a population of about 1.3 billion, I think, somewhere in that vicinity, 1.4. And the U.S. has a population of about 320 million. So we're dealing with a much smaller set of professionals and a much larger population. In fact, I think that I did a little math, and there are about 51 ASHA-certified speech language pathologists in the US for every 100,000 population. In China, it's less than one for every 100,000 population. So I think that's a very dramatic difference. Another challenge is not only the number, but the regional distribution of speech language therapists. So the majority of them are located in the East, which is where the majority of academic programs that train speech therapists are located. The central portion has about 30.5% of the respondents to the survey that Kisha did, and the West has about 20.3%. So what we see is that this is very heavily populated portion of China, as compared to the central and western part, so I think about 80% of the population may be located in that eastern portion. But it doesn't mean that people in the central and western part don't have need for services. It just becomes much more challenging because of the wider geography, the fewer number of professionals. So addressing that challenge, how does one go about doing that? Well, one thing that has begun to occur is the use of telerehabilitation. So telerehabilitation is using technology to deliver services to those that need those services. It's an aspect of telemedicine. And it has, there's been interest in China and growth in China. It's suggested that there should be more large-scale random clinical trials to determine the efficacy in China, as well as a greater examination of the economic impact of approaching service delivery in this way, as opposed to the traditional knee-to-knee type treatment. Hmm. So again, 10,000 speech therapists. So there's a need for expanded programs. That right now, and in the next slide I'll show you, that there are as of 2015, there are about 11 programs throughout the country. I think the number is now up to about 15 or 16. So there is progress being made. This was one of my first trips to China, or one of my more recent trips in 2014. I was at the East China Normal University in Shanghai and visited their program. It's one of the few speech language pathology programs in China that existed at that point in time. Things have, again, improved, and there are a couple more now. So these, as of 2015, there were 11 programs. What's most interesting, I don't know if you can see this, but 8 of these programs were started in 2012 or later. So this is about the time that there was really a push to identify the need for the profession and to implement programs. And they're happening quickly. So you can see that even 2013 and 14 and 15, there were 3 or 4 programs that were started every year. And again, that number has continued up to this point, 2019.
So who pushed for this increase?
It has come from within China itself, but with the assistance of the universities and organizations outside of China. So there are affiliate programs to the Chinese International Speech, Language, and Hearing Association from the UK, the United States, Australia, New Zealand. And I think collectively demonstrating the need worldwide and pushing this from within China by professionals that are delivering services but realize the service is undervalued. They don't know what speech language pathologists do, so how do you create a profession where there wasn't one? So I think it has been through a lot of work on the part of a lot of people to let the government see the evidence for the need for this. But it has come from the top down. With government support, a lot of these programs have gotten off the ground. Yeah.
There are
problems.
But currently, are these teachers educated in the U.S.?
Some are educated in Hong Kong, Taiwan. There are good programs there are 2 good, well-known programs in Hong Kong. So a lot of the faculty and students come from those universities, again, in Taiwan. Some come to the United States to learn and can go back and work. Director of the of Kisha is actually living in the U.S., but she is very connected to the profession there and has been promoting it. We work with a woman named Xiumen Liu, and she has been working diligently to try to promote better language assessment and addressing some of the problems that exist in trying to get these programs off the ground. So I think it's really been a grassroots effort, but it's been to get to the government so that the government can see the need and kind of facilitate the development of these programs. Sam?
So just curious, how large are each of these programs in terms of how many students are actually?
They're not large. But I don't have exact numbers for this. But I think you were getting at another issue, which is the nature of the professional education. So if you look at the kinds of professions that are calling themselves speech-language pathologists in the pathology industry, this is rehabilitationists, to account for about 52%. Rehabilitationists are people trained to be PT, OT, physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists. okay? It's truly interdisciplinary in concept. Some are special education trained, so the Nanjing Normal Special Education University in Nanjing is an example of this. Some are nursing, some are medicine, early education, a few are speech, 2%, are from what we would call speech and language programs, such as East China Normal. Okay, so we see that it's kind of a mixed bag. So when you look at all the different people that hang a shingle out that say speech therapy, their preparation can be quite varied. So Kisha did a very revealing survey. They found that 49% of those that responded said that their training was less than 30 days of specialized training in speech and language. Another 32% was between 1 and 6 months, and 18.7% said it was more than 6 months. So we kind of look and compare the amount of training in the US, which is 2 years of master's degree plus some undergraduate work, and then some, I might add that some of those, that group that had less than 30 days, there were some who responded that they had only 2 days of preparation to be speech therapists. So part of the issue here is that there is no standard, and so it can vary immensely. I met a young woman who got her rehabilitationist degree at a university that specializes in sports medicine, and she was working in a preschool with children with communication disorders, but she had about a week and a half of training. So now, that isn't to say that there isn't subsequent training that takes place on the job in experience with the children, but it's not uniform, and certainly there isn't a threshold to determine whether or not you have an adequate level of training. So how to address this challenge? Well, one of the goals is to develop more programs that do have a significant concentration of education in speech language pathology. And Nanjing Medical University, their School of Rehabilitation Sciences is an example of this, where they built a full year of speech language therapy into their curriculum. And there are others. I happen to be familiar with this program because we've worked with them. So, another challenge, when I'm looking at a child with hearing loss, I can give them a standardized test and also look at their spontaneous language, and I can feed that into a computer program, and it will tell me, give me an analysis of the kinds of structures they're using and help guide me to the appropriate intervention. You folks know better than I the linguistic diversity in China. So there are some 8 major dialects of Mandarin, I understand, and plus all of the regional languages that are spoken. I've seen numbers that say that about 30% of people in China don't speak Mandarin, and that of the 70% that remain, not all are adequate. So what we have is a lot of language variability. Even if you go and look at the language, the Mandarin in Beijing and Shanghai, they're different. So how do you develop tools that will help you diagnose? How do you know if a kid's developing adequately? Plus, the fact is that many children are probably developing more than one language at a time. So the solution to this, well, the solution lies in development of tools and also in the kind of recognition that we are dealing with something a bit more complex than a monolinguistic country. And so here are just 2 or 3 articles that I found that a kind of are trying to address this now that new language outcome measure for Mandarin-speaking children. This is a test that was developed, again, by our colleague Xiumen Liu. And this is a test that was standardized on children in Shanghai. So it's very regional, but there's a large population base in Shanghai. And it's a test that does have good validity and can provide great insight. But there are too few of these tests, and there's much need. I mentioned the idea of professional standards earlier, but that there really are none. So how do you know that the person that you're seeing as a speech therapist has met the entry-level requirements that you would have for someone who knows well what they're doing? And for this, I think the Kisha has been very responsive and very active in trying to establish standards. So this is taken from their 2014 inaugural meeting, in which they developed a strategy for how do we elevate the profession and how do we keep it moving forward and what are some of the needs that we need to be addressing. So one of the things that they've done is they've identified collaborations from throughout the world. So you'll see that there are certainly national and regional organizations that they've affiliated with, but there are also international associations, including the Royal College of Speech Language Therapists, the American Speech Language and Hearing Association, the Canadian Speech and Hearing Association, the Asia Pacific Society of Speech Language and Hearing. So by aligning with these types of affiliates, they're benefiting from and able to channel knowledge and information and organizational ideas that they're using to try to build the profession. An additional problem that exists, however, is that there aren't many resources out there. So right now, I tried to get a picture of a textbook, and I don't know what that says in Chinese. But given the picture on the cover of a man in a wheelchair, I don't think it's about speech language pathology, but it came up under speech therapy, so I added it.
The title is speech.
It is.
Speech.
Oh, it is. Good.
Speech.
Okay. Good.
Okay.
Great. So there are a few books. There are something like a total of 20 textbooks that cover the range. There are about 6 in child language, 4 in dysphagia or swallowing disorders, 6 in speech and voice, a couple more in neurocognitive rehabilitation, and 4 in hearing rehabilitation. And many of these are translated. Some have been written originally in Chinese. This is improving, and there have been more and more at the urging of Kisha, so there are additional textbooks that are being translated now. So again, the picture is not dismal, it is improving, but there is still a limited amount of resources for providing education in Chinese. Kisha has also been very involved with tapping into social media. Developed a speech therapist QQ group, which is has nearly 2,000 members. It has developed, it's on WeChat, but everybody's on WeChat, YY Online Teaching Network, Weibo, the Kisha website, and various blogs. So the effort is to try to network individuals within China who are working with children with and adults with communication disorders to try to improve the amount of in-service and continuing education that might occur. There also have been, we've gone and we've given lectures in China, people from my department. We've given lectures on autism issues having to do with traumatic brain injury, stuttering, early intervention. And we are not the only university that has come and done this. So it's an effort to try to provide a little more information. And it's also been a learning experience for us in going and seeing how early intervention happens in China and the investment of parents in early intervention. So it's been a bit of a two-way street, but it has provided an entree for new information that has been more difficult to get in previous years.
Thank you.